Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
It is Jhené and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr. and ESPN Vikings reporter Courtney Cronin in for Jhené Egbuemeke today. And we got a lot to get to. We're going to talk to Mike Tannenbaum in about a half hour, our front office insider, about the battle that we just watched between Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers. Nicole Arbach from The Athletic's going to stop by and help us try and gauge the playing field now in college football. As we're getting into media days, Texas and Oklahoma have stated their desire to now head to the SEC in a few years. But Courtney, as we sit here now and as we woke up this morning, for a lot of people, as the Olympics have, you know, been on all different hours and the time changes had its effects, a lot of people were waking up and seeing the news about Simone Biles, an Olympic legend in women's gymnastics, who pulled herself out of the women's team competition that ultimately ended with Team USA taking silver after her round of the vault. And Courtney, we've seen all range of reaction to this, of an athlete of Simone's caliber, of her importance to the sport, and certainly her importance to this team. What surprised you the most about this stretch, this response to what we've seen from Simone Biles, who cited her mental health, talked about what she was dealing with between her ears that affected the way she was able to go out there and perform to enough to where she decided the best thing for herself, what she thought the best thing for this team, was to pull back?
Because she had waited so long for this Tokyo Olympics to happen, that she realized in that moment, because you'll hear from her on this show and others where she waited, you know, that 5.5 hours, something didn't feel right. She couldn't nap. She was restless. Like, and it was something that it was a sensation she had not experienced going into a competition. And this girl has done hundreds, if not thousands, of competitions throughout her life as a gymnast, professional, and even before that. So to me, it was just how she took the decision in stride and said, I am not going to stand in the way of Team USA, the team that my face is plastered all over, winning at all costs. Like, she didn't put her own winning at all cost in the way of the overall team goal. And I think that that should be something that should be, you know, given a lot of respect and a lot of props for, because I'm sure this wasn't an easy decision for her to come to. And in spite of all of this, she had, you know, she's a competitor. She's got a lot of fire to her. I love seeing her interviews. I love hearing the clapbacks. I love it all. And that's got to be incredibly difficult for somebody who is a fighter and a competitor to be able to say, me not being at my best is doing more harm than it's doing good. And being able to withdraw yourself from the situation, knowing the criticism you're going to face for this and the backlash, because there's just a lot of people out there who don't seem to understand the severity of what could happen if she makes a quarter of a centimeter of an inch of a whatever wrong turn and ends up paralyzed because she's not exactly in the right space mentally. Like, there's a lot of factors here with gymnastics. You talked about the offensive line and, you know, guys in past sets doing things that are not natural to your body as an offensive lineman. You know what that's like, being in the heat of competition. Gymnastics is a really, really difficult sport, last I checked. And all of the things that you have to do physically when you're up in the air and with a split second to react, if you're not in the right mental space, you could end up seriously hurt. And she realized all of that and still withdrew from competition, and is handling it, I think, you know, in an incredibly graceful way. Like, that to me really stood out from this morning.
Yeah, Courtney, I think looking at all that, you mentioned how unnatural this had. I think there's a lot of us that are trying to apply. A lot of the people that I think have been critical of Simone have done so applying logic from sports that they know to something that they're not as familiar with the specifics of, right? Like everything that you just mentioned there. Olympic, you know, the gymnastics are something that we tend to parachute in on once every 4 years as a larger sports-watching public, and applying some of those sensibilities to a spot where you don't fully understand what's being weighed there. Like, the thing I keep going back to in making this decision, in the difficulty this had to be, and this comes up in other areas. I've had this conversation when people have raked guys over the coals for being transfer players in college or for moving around. I understand every case is different. But for kids and players and people that are actually attacking this thing with everything that they've got, those are extremely difficult decisions to uproot your life and move. This is a decision that was for and made 5 years in the making. This was something that she had trained for and worked for in that time with a team of people. Simone Biles, you could argue, has had to show dedication to her sport in a way that few other athletes will ever comprehend based on what she's talked about representing the survivors of everything that went on with Larry Nassar and the hellscape that this sport has endured and its athletes have endured. Like, Simone Biles has had to stand up for and with a lot during this time period. And so to think that this decision came lightly or easily. Like, we talked to Alyssa Roenick before, ESPN senior writer who was covering this, who wrote about this, and you could hear her get angry at the notion that Simone Biles let her teammates down through this.
I can't imagine the disappointment.
At the time,
knowing Simone, she was incredibly disappointed in herself, but she hid that away. She put on a smile, and she coached her teammates. She cheered them on. She was running the chalk box to them between rotations on uneven bars. I mean, she really was everything her teammates needed once she realized she could not compete. And her teammates said, I mean, Jordan Chiles said afterwards, we won this for her. We did this because of her. Most of us, Jordan especially, would not be here if not for her support and guidance. You know, she brought Jordan to her gym when Jordan was ready to quit the sport. You know, what Simone has meant to the sport and to her teammates goes so far beyond just that couple of hours on Tuesday morning.
And that was Alyssa Roenick again earlier on Chiney and Golic Jr. today. And Courtney, that's the notion that I think gets frustrating here, because you can already hear people loading up as she still got the potential to compete in individual events. She said she's going to take it day by day, assess how she's feeling going into that. Well, I mean, I understand we don't know Simone Biles, but from everything we've seen, the level of dedication this athlete has shown to this sport to push her to a realm where she is doing things that only she has ever done. To think that she is not the best judge of what it takes to be able to accomplish that, not only successfully for herself and for the team, but safely, seems like just a hubris on our part that I'm really trying and hoping to see we can rein in.
You know what this kind of reminds me of? Remember in 2019, when Kevin Durant was dealing with the Achilles injury, and everyone who was either a fan of Golden State or, you know, really didn't like Kevin Durant and the fact that he wasn't out there. Why isn't he out there? He's had all this time off to recover, this, that, and the other thing. What happens? He goes back out there against the Raptors and he ruptures his Achilles. Who's the better judge of his body? I think Kevin Durant was in that situation. Who's the better judge of her body? I think it's Simone Biles in this situation. I just look at this and it's a lot of armchair QBs wanting to tell these athletes that, no, you need to push through. You need to do this, that, and the other thing. And it's probably because there's that fine line, like you and I were talking about in preparing for the show. You know, in football, was it a hamstring pull, or was the guy had the hamstring torn off the bone? Which one was it? Because we're going to determine whether that person had enough mental and physical toughness to battle through. And we're going to, in the court of public opinion, going to determine whether we give that person credence or whether we criticize them. I don't think you can criticize Simone Biles at all for any of this. And, you know, her sister had something on Twitter earlier about how it's convenient when mental health, you want to talk about it at certain points, but when it comes to a situation like this where gold medal's on the line and yep, this happens only once every 4 or 5 years, where people want to push that to the wayside, you can't have it both ways. And I think that Simone Biles took a step forward today to show show people that you can still be the GOAT and not necessarily have to be perfect throughout that whole thing.
Yeah, and that mental health conversation, we're only going to get better at having it if we actually have it, if we expose it and we talk about it in these different situations here and not just treat every instance as some cookie cutter. This is Simone dealing with things that, as you pointed out before, she's had issues in dealing with depression and anxiety in the past. This is not something new for her, but this is her individual journey. And again, we're not going to get better at talking about it unless we do, because what you brought up there was the way that we've framed toughness in the past, right? Like, we've framed it as sports means sacrificing your body for the success and betterment of others. And I always think sacrificing for your teammates is always a huge part of sports, but we've been trained to see it one way for a really long time now. And we've now arrived at a generation of athletes in a lot of sports that, because of the information they've got, because of what they've seen happen to prior generations, has looked at that paradigm and says, hey, maybe we can do this in a different way that acknowledges my humanity and my role in this a little bit more, and my understanding and expertise of my body in a situation that very few other people are going to have, to your point about Kevin Durant and about Simone Biles. So we know this is not going to be the end of this conversation, and that's a good thing, but we can do this in a way that's respectful. It doesn't have to be attacking Simone Biles. We can come to this seeking to understand in a way that a lot of these athletes are starting and willing to let us in on more and more throughout this conversation. Coming up next, though, we will head back into the world of the NFL. Courtney Cronin has been getting ready to be out covering Vikings training camp. We've got teams reporting all over the National Football League, including one who got its quarterback back at a time they may not have fully expected. What's that mean for the NFC North and the health of the Packers this year? Next on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $700 on average. Call or click today and find out if we could save you hundreds on your car insurance. Chenay and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Courtney Cronin filling in for Chenay today. And Courtney, Aaron Rodgers reported on time to training camp with the Green Bay Packers. I know you've been efforting all day because he showed up about as relaxed as possible. He had a T-shirt with Kevin from the office, big colorful sunglasses, shorts, and sandals. And I know you've been efforting. Have we made any headway on the brand of sandals that he walked into training camp with? Because I feel like we've got to get to the bottom of this now.
It's the photos that I've seen are just a little too far away, taken from the platform high above Lambeau Field over the players' parking lot. I can't make out if they're rainbows or reefs. If any of our friends covering the Packers beat on hour number one of the last like 3 days of sleep, if they can chime in, 888-SAY-ESPN, let us know. I would definitely appreciate that. But he definitely tried to, like, he didn't waltz in there, you know, trying to draw any more attention to himself. I think the whole, like, laid-back, low-key thing was probably the best thing he could do, because the entire offseason has been about Aaron Rodgers and the attention surrounding him and what he said, what he hasn't said. The more that I look at this, and I thought about this right as we were about to go on air, and just thinking how this whole thing went from how dare the Packers treat their star quarterback like this and not involve him in personnel decisions, to maybe the tide shifting to where people are kind of irritated at Aaron Rodgers and kind of the stunt that, you know, mind you, that he pulled this entire offseason. I don't know. I feel like the court of public opinion in Aaron Rodgers and the smugness, if you want to call that, is starting to wear a little thin on people. And maybe not starting. Maybe it has been. But him reporting today, months after all that, it's just kind of interesting where this whole thing is. And I am really curious about the day-to-day nature of what happens in training camp and where this thing goes. And, you know, we'll all be locked into whatever Aaron Rodgers has to say on his first day of media availability.
Yeah, you know he's going to try and put his tongue firmly in his cheek and act surprised that we were all so worked up, because we never really heard anything specifically from him. And Courtney, I think there can be something said about how the reception's going to be inside that building. I don't think him and Brian Gutekunst, their GM, are going to be shaking hands in the hallways or probably even making real eye contact at this point. I think him and the team could be all right, but I can tell you, as we look at this, there are a bunch of owners, 31 other owners around the NFL, that are really, really happy with how clearly the establishment won in this setting, right? Like, this was no doubt a reminder that there are so many things stacked against players who want to try and force and make the kind of moves that Aaron Rodgers was attempting to this offseason. And whether it's, you know, the CBA or just the general dynamic that exists in the sport as violent as football, this was another one of those reminders that the house usually always wins at this point.
And Aaron Rodgers did come out it's not like he came away empty-handed, right? Like, he got the reduction in years on his contract. That's what he wanted. I know that he wanted to be out of there now, but that was at least the concession that both sides agreed to. But in the end, The owners in the league always win. And I know this is a completely different situation, what's happening down in Houston with Deshaun Watson. But remember all the stuff this offseason, I'm not reporting, I'm never playing another down for the Texans, I'm never going to be back in the building, et cetera, et cetera. And I do not believe he will ever play another down of football for the Texans. I want to make that clear. He still showed up at camp. Why? Because he doesn't want to miss out on that $10 million salary. Also, those $50,000 fines that you accrue daily for missing each day of training camp, this new CBA that was ratified right before COVID took off in 2020, those are not forgiven anymore. It's not like the team and the player's agent and the representation can just come and shake hands and say, let's forgive like $400,000 that my client just missed out on because he missed a couple days of training camp to prove a point and to try to create more leverage for himself. So I think Aaron Rodgers realized that and said, okay, I can't really carry this thing out any further and waiting to see who's going to blink first. Mike, as we've learned throughout multiple situations where players are unhappy about where they're at and they can't force a trade, the team is never the one that blinks first.
No, and this has worked out to a point where because the Packers refused to blink, Jen Latta, who does a great job on the morning show on ESPN Milwaukee with Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, was on with Bart and Hahn earlier and said all of this went exactly how the Packers wanted.
It kind of feels like the Packers got everything they wanted. I mean, Brian Gutekunst essentially wanted another year of Aaron Rodgers and flexibility after that to maybe turn the page to his first-round draft pick, Jordan Love. And while maybe Rodgers now has the choice, depending on the wording of these concessions of where he might go, and maybe has a little more power in that, it kind of feels like the Packers got what they wanted.
Now, what's going to be interesting, and coming up next, we'll get to this with one of our great ESPN NFL front office insiders, is it over now? Is all of this done being an issue for that Packers front office? Or, as Courtney has pointed out, can this still be a source of strife inside that Packers building? We'll get to that next after this word from 5-Hour Energy. Now, if you guys are looking to get in shape, but maybe having trouble staying motivated, make 5-Hour Energy Shots part of your lifestyle and get the energy boost that you need to get fit. You always know where to find 5-Hour Energy Shots, too. They're right at the cash register at darn near every convenience, drug, and grocery store nationwide. Or you can go to 5hourenergy.com today. And when you get there, use the promo code GOLIC to receive 10% off your order. That's the number 5hourenergy.com, promo code GOLIC for 10% off. This offer cannot be used with other promotions. Code is not applicable on subscription orders. Back with Mike Tannenbaum next here on ESPN Radio.
Coming up tomorrow morning with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. Chicago Bears head coach Matt Nagy as our countdown to the NFL season continues. Bears head coach Matt Nagy tomorrow morning at 8:45 Eastern with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News. Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Packers are now offering concessions to the reigning NFL MVP.
This is about creating a path for Aaron Rodgers to leave Green Bay potentially after this season.
Janae Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Courtney Cronin. And the bad man is back. Aaron Rodgers, Green Bay Packers training camp. No longer a collision course. They are right there assessing the situation. And for more on how we assess what happens going forward, our ESPN NFL front office insider Mike Tannenbaum joins us now on the Goodyear Hotline. And Mike, is at this point Aaron Rodgers back in camp? Everyone shakes hands, hugs, and sings Kumbaya. Like, is it all good from here on out for him and the organization after a summer and really going all the way back to the end of last season, an entire off-season cycle full of what feels like headaches for both parties?
Yeah, it's kind of, a little bit more of a wait-and-see approach. You know, Adam Schefter's done a remarkable job, as usual, reporting on the alleged details here that we'd love to see in the contract, but clearly by shaving 1 year off the contract, by removing some of the default language, meaning that if Aaron Rodgers retires, he keeps all the money. Clearly that gives him more leverage, but let's make no mistake about it. He's still under contract to Green Bay for next year, and that's really important to me because if we go back to August of 2019, Tom Brady had his contract shortened with no option for the Patriots to franchise or transition him. he was a free agent. He left. And when we talk about these NBA super teams, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, they sign shorter contracts and they're able to move around. So I think what happened today is helpful for Aaron Rodgers, but I still think there's a lot here for the Packers.
Yeah, in the end, the Packers got exactly what they wanted because they're going to have a chance to get have Rodgers for one more year and then potentially be moving on to Jordan Love. But I'm just wondering, when you talk about leverage and talk about what Aaron Rodgers came away with, it kind of feels like he was the loser in this situation. Do you see it the same way?
Yeah, Courtney, like I'm not sure if it's a winner and a loser in as much as I agree from Green Bay's standpoint. I think something that's pretty important here is the development of Jordan Love. If we go back a year ago, we had the pandemic, and no backup quarterback was getting a lot of reps. So this gives them like a whole other year to hopefully develop Jordan Love into a winning quarterback. And that's one part of it. And I think for Aaron Rodgers, he probably got the best of the situation, which is in the new CBA, the fines that would have started today are not ones that a club can waive. He would have racked up massive fines, and he would have had 3 years left on his contract. And I think at some point, he had to reconcile the fact that he wasn't going to get everything he wanted this year. So, again, I'd say he made progress, but he certainly didn't get everything he wanted. And that's just because the teeth of the NFL CBA and the fact that he still had 3 years left on his deal.
Mike, now inside that building, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers team have to go to work together. They all still want to win this season. Do any of those bad feelings spill over in a way that you think affects the team here? Like, how do you handle this if you are GM Brian Gutekunst walking into this situation now with a quarterback who's clearly made you the enemy this offseason?
Well, you know, that's what front offices are for, to be candid, Mike. You know, it's one of these things where Matt LaFleur, he has to be in the foxhole every day, coach these guys up, give them the best chance to win. And that's the job of the front office, is to run the franchise candidly as responsibly as possible. And sometimes you have to make hard decisions. You can't pay everyone exactly what they want. Not everybody in the building has the right title in terms of what they want. And you have to, you know, soldier on. But I can promise you that in their 17 games, when Aaron Rodgers looks across the field, the opposition is going to have a bunch of players that feel the same way, that they're underpaid or undertitled, whatever it may be. So once the season goes, you have to be focused. You have to be a professional. With that said, do I think Aaron Rodgers may have, you know, one eye towards the future? Of course he is, but that doesn't mean they still can't be competitive this year with him.
So the NFL just put out a statement saying that Deshaun Watson is eligible to fully participate in club activities, but we know that if you put him out on the field, you risk him getting injured, so that's probably a no-go for the Texans who start training camp tomorrow. How soon do you think they're able to execute a deal here to move on from Watson and to be able to, you know, turn the page to the Nick Caserio, David Culley era without this giant distraction within their building currently?
Yeah, I think that we're a ways away from that, Corey, and here's why. If we're with a team and we're interested in training for Deshaun Watson, first and foremost, there's a number of criminal accusations here. And, you know, we have to be mindful there could be a number of victims. And even if there is some sort of plea bargain or charges are dropped, whatever that may be, we have to go back to 2010. Ben Roethlisberger was suspended for 6 games for the violation of the personal conduct policy, even though there were no criminal charges. So we have to remember that the standard for the personal conduct policy is lower than the criminal standard. And therefore, if we were another team, until we know exactly where all these things eventually play out, it would really be hard to trade. Now, what you could do is put some conditions in the trade. But again, because we're dealing with criminal accusations, I just think it would be difficult for a team to make that trade now.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, what do you do if you're the Texans in this situation? Do you just... Obviously, you don't want to put him out in front of the media, so that's probably not going to happen. But what do you do with this player? Do you tell him to go home? Do you give him an excused absence? Do you keep him in meeting rooms in the building? What's the right play here?
Yeah, I think one of the things you would consider doing, Courtney, is having him work out with the trainer, the strength coach, keep him in great shape, have him go to meetings. But I do agree, you know, if he would get hurt, it just would exacerbate an already very, you know, difficult and challenging situation. So I think maybe the middle ground is he's around the team, but clearly his eligibility, again, for the regular season, even if he was a Texan, is really unknown. And again, you know, we could go back 11 years to the Roethlisberger situation to, you know, see, again, a player could be suspended even though there's no criminal charges. So there's a lot to work through here, and I would not put him on the field if I was Houston. I would make sure that he was part of the team, but keep him on the sidelines.
It's a lot of difficult decisions that are going to have to be made and likely be made soon coming up here as we approach start a training camp for all the teams around the NFL. Mike, we appreciate your time and insight as always, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you a lot soon as the NFL season gets set to kick off here.
Thank you. Really appreciate being with you guys.
Great stuff. Again, Mike Tannenbaum. You can follow him on Twitter at RealTannenbaum and check him out all over ESPN. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $700 on average. Call or click today and find out if we could save you hundreds on your car insurance. Coming up next, what's next for Oklahoma and Texas, who have stated their intentions to try and join up with the SEC? How soon can we see this happen, and what's the next domino to fall? We'll do that here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
The SEC, it just means more teams. That apparently was the plan. That's what the motto all along. And so, as Oklahoma and Texas make their intentions clear to join the SEC, the next questions are, how soon and who else decides they're feeling froggy and going to go ahead and jump? Jhené and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Courtney Cronin filling in for Jhené Egbuemeke. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Hoping to talk to Nicole Arbach, senior writer over at The Athletic, covering college football in just a minute here, because Courtney, we've all been sitting around right now. This is one of those topics that, much like, you know, discussing which quarterback is unhappy with his current team in the NFL every year, for college football, it's always seemed like conference realignment is something that's lurking right under the surface every time for us to talk about. And so it's got everyone feeling kind of antsy about what the future for their team looks like now.
Yeah, I mean, there's conference realignment that could happen. There's all this jostling, you know, within divisions and what have you, and it makes you wonder, if you're creating a conference of super teams, what does that do to the rest of the landscape of college football? What does that do financially to other leagues? And I think that that's really important as we try to figure out moving forward in the college football landscape, the haves and the have-nots. It feels like there's going to be a bigger line between the two.
Yeah, there certainly seems like that's going to grow. And Courtney, it's become interesting for me because we have so many conversations around name, image, and likeness that have gone on in college football. And I've had to remind people that's not true pay for play. It's not money coming out of the school's pocket. These kind of shifts in power make me wonder if, as that gap grows, we start to broach that conversation a lot sooner as these leagues look to start to make these decisions. But for more on the impact of what this decision by Texas and Oklahoma could mean, we head to the Goodyear hotline to talk to Nicole Arbach, senior writer at The Athletic, covering college football. And Nicole, Oklahoma and Texas send their official request into the SEC today. Commissioner Greg Sankey and the conference have acknowledged they circled 2025 as a date for this. Do you believe, based on how fast this has gone, that we could see them joining the conference officially far sooner?
Yes, and I don't really think it's because about how fast this is going, but rather, can you imagine 4 years of this? Like, knowing you're leaving and then staying for 4 years? Like, I've heard the comparison of, you know, somebody catches their spouse cheating and then lives with them under the same roof and does everything with them for 4 years after that. Like, it's just incredibly uncomfortable, and we've seen how uncomfortable it gets when there's like a 1 year lag in between someone leaving a conference and it becoming official. So yeah, I don't see that, but you know, obviously it's going to take lawyers, it's going to take millions and millions of dollars, but yeah, I mean, I'd be shocked if it actually goes 4 years until we see them in the SEC.
The group dubbed the Irate Eight in the Big 12, what's been left over since Texas and Oklahoma broke this news that they want out. Nicole, what happens next? Like, in terms of conference realignment, do these schools form, I guess, what do they do? Like, do they go somewhere else? Like, who devours whom? What's next?
Yeah, well, that's the next question. You know, I think people got to figure out, of those eight schools, you know, do they trust each other? Do they want to stay together as a block? Do they think that they could add? You know, nothing is going to be as valuable. No one they could add would be close to as valuable as Oklahoma and Texas. But you've got to do something, right? You know, you don't immediately lose being a Power Five conference. There's nothing written in there about like a minimum or that Oklahoma and Texas have to be in it. So that is an important point to start from. And then do you look at Cincinnati and UCF and SMU? The American, you know, I've been told, is interested in trying to be an aggressor and looking at those schools and trying to poach them. So, who's, you know, are they going to both be trying to poach each other at the same time? Are some of the, you know, is Baylor and Oklahoma State, are they going to try to talk to the Pac-12 and try to get absorbed? Does the Pac-12 want to go into Texas, Oklahoma? And then West Virginia, the, you know, I'm told that their preferred landing spot would be the ACC, which is where they tried to go 10 years ago. They've improved their academic standard. They've improved their resources. Is that enough for the ACC to be interested? And then you just think about the actual value that these schools would have. And it's hard to see in the remaining eight in the Big 12, you know, that there's enough value for the Big 10, who's paying out, you know, $55 million for each of their schools. Is there a school worth $55 million a year? Because they'd have to divide the revenue by another, another slice. So, you know, you have to think about it that way in terms of adding value and not just adding bodies. And that's kind of the West Virginia question with the ACC too. It's probably not enough to pique the interest of the ACC if it's not with a Notre Dame, and Notre Dame wants to stay independent, right? So, like, there's just so many uncertainties here that we don't know if, you know, some of those conferences are going to want to be aggressive, want to add. We also don't know if those eight schools, the leftovers of the Big 12, if they trust each other and want to act together, if they're all looking out for number one and making calls to see if they can land somewhere else. I mean, conference realignment gets pretty ruthless, and it's very hard to figure out, you know, even if you trust someone, are they going to flee for a greener pasture themselves and leave you hanging?
Chenangle Jr. here on ESPN Radio talking to Nicole Auerbach, senior college football writer at The Athletic. And Courtney, you're right. It's so many things hanging in the balance. For you, as you've looked into all of this and reported on all of this, what are you looking for next that's going to tell you what you believe is most about whatever starts to flow from here?
Well, I think the question is the SEC stopping at 16? You know, obviously we know that Texas and Oklahoma have sent the letters asking for admission to the SEC. We know the SEC presidents are meeting later this week. You know, again, the question is just what, when can that happen? When does that marriage begin? But is that it? Is are they going to 16, adding Oklahoma and Texas, and staying put? Or do is there an end game that is a even larger than 16? You know, maybe that's not right now. Is that 5 years from now? Is that 10 years from now? What does this look like, right? What is the SEC trying to do? Obviously, they're trying to chart their own course in college football in an era where the NCAA has been devalued and is talking about decentralizing some of its power. So all of that's important context to think about when you're thinking about, like, what this is going to look like a couple of years from now. And if you go to 16, does 16 cause the Big Ten and the ACC and the Pac-12 to feel like they need to make moves? I think a lot of people immediately jump to, okay, you're going to have four mega conferences. Well, they don't have to. They don't have to add if the value is not there. You know, do those three conferences kind of align themselves a little bit together if the, if they're worried that the SEC is going to go beyond 16, right? Like, we don't really know. And I think we, you know, as you're waiting for more clarity to come out of the SEC because they couldn't really talk about these things for legal reasons until this letter was submitted. I don't know if we're going to have answers on that front until later, but that will determine, again, what the other power conferences, which have three new commissioners, by the way, in the Big Ten, ACC, and the Pac-12, if they feel like they need to act. As you guys know, 10 years ago, every time there's realignment, there's always a fear of inaction. And people are you know, worried about being the last one standing somewhere. They're worried about being UConn. UConn, what, like, there was so much sympathy, you know, for what happened to UConn being stuck in and left behind when a lot of the people in their league left for the ACC and West Virginia went to the Big 12 and all these other places. And so in the Big 10. So you have to, you know, kind of guard against something like that happening to you, but also not making rash decisions. So everyone I talk to in these major conferences that are not the SEC are saying, like, okay, we need to let the dust settle. We need to be patient. But there's also people in our league who are like, what do we have to do? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Are we going to add somebody, right? So you have that dynamic happening all across the country, and this news was so stunning to people just last week. It's not like these conferences knew it was coming and could prepare.
it's been amazing. Your point about the three new conference commissioners is very well served in all of this. We're up against it, Nicole. I'm sorry. We're going to have you back for Ted Lasso talk coming up very soon. One of the internet's foremost experts on one of the best shows on television. Nicole, we appreciate your time. We'll talk to you soon, friend.
All right. Be a goldfish.
Biscuits with the Boss is going to be a segment we make work around here. But you heard it there from Nicole. There's so much to weigh in on all this. Be interesting to see if she's right, if the SEC is done trying to eat some of these other conferences and poach some of their best teams. But coming up next, we'll head back to the Olympics. Big news this morning out of the games about one of the most noteworthy athletes in all of sports. Next, here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Thanks for listening to Jhené and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.